Reading FC were the first side to confirm their championship status in 2020-2021. That is definitely not going up or down. In a week of two disappointing defeats to Middlesbrough and Blackburn, we are certainly very happy to be no longer battling relegation, but it is certainly a case of mid-table meh instead. Welcome to episode 230 of the Tyler Sen podcast with your host Mark Mayer, and joining me this week is the Tyler Sen's own website writer, Adam Jones. How's it going, mate?
Yeah, I'm very good, thank you. How are you?
I'm not too bad. This is one of those, I think, as we were just talking off air, this, for anyone listening today, hoping for an in-depth recap of our two defeats, perhaps might be a bit disappointed, because I'm happy to let these things go into the record books and, you know, no one's going to be reliving them, are they? And then we've got some quite philosophical questions later on in the show, which would be quite interesting. How would you find, just quick before we go into the recap then, how did you find that that the mega goals of the defeat to Blackburn then?
Yeah, it was obviously disappointing, really, after the after three clean sheets consecutively. It was a bit gutting, I think, especially with McIntyre and Osho as well in the starting 11. You want them to build more and more confidence. Obviously, we can't keep keeping clean sheets forever, and it's probably impossible, really, but to concede six goals in two games after keeping three clean sheets, it was just really disappointing. I mean, on the plus side, we scored four goals in the last two games, which is not too bad, and it shows that we can be a threat going forward. I think that's been a big part of our problems, but very disappointing to concede that many.
Yeah, a very odd sort of situation we found ourselves in after, as you say, the low scoring season we've had in low defence, you know, low goals conceded as well, to jump into certainly the Blackburn game, a bit of a weird situation for us. Before we jump into the recap then, as I would always like to thank our Patreon subscribers as well, those putting their pennies in the virtual tip jar is always very much appreciated, and our sponsor ZCZ Films as well, as we get to the penultimate recap of the season. Let's go and talk about, I suppose, the story of the season then. Two defeats.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
Right, Adam, as we kind of said before then, let's keep it short and sweet with the 2-1 defeat to Middlesbrough at the Mad Stand in midweek, a 4-3 defeat to Blackburn. On the weekend, this would have been the classic inflatables day. I think we had one of those at Blackburn recently for the last away game of the season. So probably no real sadness to lose that. But really, I think, as you kind of said going into the intro then, let's talk about the attack first. Reading, you know, not too brilliant in Middlesbrough, but, you know, you get the goal, you think you're doing all right, and there's a real chance of, you know, just seeing out the first half and not conceding against the team in the relegation battle. And then, you know, as per typically happens, key moment of the game, just on the edge of half-time, they go score. And then second half, Middlesbrough really just wanted it more, I think, got the second goal. And, yeah, I suppose the key takeaways for the attack then is the Liam Moore scoring. There wasn't really anything to shout about for that game.
No, there wasn't really. There wasn't very much in terms of the attacking side. I think there was a lot of disappointment on the defending side, obviously conceding both of the goals. But what I would say in terms of the experience of playing Warnock is the fact that it's good for the likes of McIntyre and Osho as well to be playing against a typical championship Warnock side. I think regardless of whether he's going to retire or not in the next year or two, I think it was a good experience for them. Obviously, I've seen Bowen's comments after the Middlesbrough game about Baldock and Puskas and them not performing, but there has to be service as well on the attacking side, and it just didn't really come off for them, really. I think it was unfair to blame Baldock and Puskas, and I can't imagine either of them being very happy looking back on Mark Bowen's comments after the game.
No, it's an interesting one when Bowen, as you say, sort of targeted the strikers to an extent and basically just said, you know, we've got to be doing more. Reading did have, you know, 10 shots against Middlesbrough, and I think most of those, just having a quick look now, yeah, most of Middlesbrough's came towards the end of the game. So really up until the 70th minute, we were comfortably creating more chances. than them. And I generally must agree with Rob Bowen that our strikers have been disappointing this season, but it depends as to, you know, hopefully he knows the mentality of the players as to getting the best out of them. In terms of the Middlesbrough game as well, something interesting that we saw was Liam Moore being deployed in this kind of anchorman role. I tweeted before the game, I'm all for it in a way. It's a good opportunity to make the most out of a player who, let's face it, he's not the centre-back that he once was. I think it was the Patrick Roberts goal, actually. He did still provide one of his classics just too late, blocks that just didn't quite get there in time. And he came on as well in the Blackburn game, having been dropped back to the bench. So did you think that, is there a future for Liam Moore as a kind of CDM? It's one of those that, as I say, I was all for it in practice, on paper, rather, seems like a really good idea. You know, you have your ball-playing centre-back step out and he's quite, you know, on paper, good at that. But in reality, did it actually work?
I mean, I didn't mind. When I looked at the team sheet, I didn't mind him being in the starting 11 because it gave us a replacement, a sufficient replacement defensively for Pele. And obviously, he was going to be a big miss. But yeah, I wasn't too against it. In terms of him having a future at the club as CDM, I think it's for another manager at another club to decide. I don't think he'll be staying beyond the summer. But in terms of the present day, I think he can do a job there. There's no point getting around the fact that he has kind of declined a little bit over the past couple of years. Maybe that's the disappointment from not going to Brighton. Maybe it's because of the rest of the team. But yeah, I think, you know, considering it's the end of the season and we didn't have a lot to play for, definitely worth trying him out there. But I don't think he has a future really at our club.
No, well, he did, as I say, he came off the bench for Tom McIntyre in the 36th minute of the Blackburn game and then played centre-back. And then in the Blackburn game, we kind of played the sort of 4-2-3-1, except 4-4-2, whatever you want to call it, that we've been playing previously, went back to a more normal situation. Pele's not been seen in the last week. I can't tell you for a fact whether that's down to injury or just the fact that he's a lone player and he's not going to play, so there's no, or not going to stay, so there's no point playing him. Same with Matt Miazga, he's been on the bench, we've just not seen him because, again, I guess, why would you in a large sense of the word? We did have, funny enough, Felipe Araruna, the Brazilian defensive midfielder, was on the bench against Blackburn. So he exists. That's grand. He's around. He's a permanent signing, so God knows whether we'll see him much next season. And that Blackburn game, then, Adam, two goals in the first 6 minutes. It's kind of like with Reading goals conceded, it's kind of like Test cricket in a way, isn't it? When the other team gets one, they get two. They do seem to come in pairs, don't they? Reading get back with the John Swift, really nice John Swift free kick. Blackburn score again. Reading get two in 4 minutes with Baldock and Mate. Two nice goals there. 3-3 draw, you do think, with a comeback. Okay, everything's grand. We'll have that. That's fine. Then Blackburn score in the 87th minute and take the win. Just in terms of this game on its own, just seems like it's just a bit of a disappointing way, really. You want to have those moments. Fair enough, during the Championship season, you're not going to win every game. You are going to go away to decent teams like Blackburn and maybe concede a few goals. But to get the comeback point, I think we're really happy with that. But to then concede it, it's just that kind of sucker blow that you just don't need.
Yeah, I think there's a deeper meaning behind coming back as well, because it just shows from 3-1, despite the loss, that we can actually come back and score quick fire and actually get back into the game and have a bit of fighting spirit about us. And I think that's what everyone really wants to see. Obviously, it's not too heartbreaking. Obviously, it's still disappointing because we've lost at the end of the day. But obviously, it's not as heartbreaking as 2006-07, where we had a chance of getting in Europe and end up drawing 3-3 at Blackburn. But I don't think it was a heartbreak. But yeah, it was good to see an entertaining match where it was pretty much, it was like a basketball game where it was just end-to-end stuff. And definitely, I think it was good.
Yeah, there was something in the Lucozade bottles on the Championship on Saturday, because Fulham beat Sheffield Wednesday 5-3 and QPR beat Millwall 4-3. So I think a lot of teams, as you kind of say, maybe towards a lot of these goals as well, if you look across the games, a lot of the goals came in the second half. A lot of time they do anyway. But maybe there was a sense of team just going, oh, the season's basically over. let's just go mental, which I'm all here for. Whether Reading can do that on the final game of the season, we'll talk about that later. But for those who pay to watch it and everything, a relatively decent, entertaining affair, you could say, without too much of a long-term issue. Reading 15th in the table now by goal difference over Sheffield Wednesday. We won't finish any lower than 16th. If we beat Swansea, we'll get to 13th at the most. I mean, really, like, does it sound much... Looking, if we go ahead 5 years and look back to now, Adam, do you think it'll make any shade of a difference whether we're 13th or 15th or whatever?
It depends how we do in the next 5 years or whatever, because you could really see this as a season of stability after the last couple of seasons we've been hovering around the relegation zone. And it's been nice this season where, although there have been certain worries about relegation at certain points of the season, we've secured our safety and we've now had a chance to kind of experiment more. But the difference between 13th and 16th sounds huge, really, in the Championship, because you look at a 13th place finish and you're thinking, we're knocking on the door of the top half here. But if you go on to 16th, you're looking at maybe another lower mid-table finish. That's maybe how you look at it. But it depends on how you look at it, really, as to how successful this season has been. I think this has been a season of stability, but will this help for the long term? I don't know. I think this summer will probably be... I say this every summer, but this will be the most important transfer window in years, and I think this will have more of a bearing on our future than this season will, in a way. I think this season will still have an impact, but not as much as this next transfer window, and that's why I'm nervous about this next window.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? We've had we'll be talking later on in News Bites about some comings, or mainly goings, I should say, and also Sam Baldock talking to BBC Bucks, which we'll talk a bit more in depth about later, with some really interesting comments about what might be happening over the summer. And with him, a final word I would say on the recap is we mentioned that Mark Bowen basically challenged his strikers to do better ahead of the Blackburn game. George Puskas failed to do better. Sam Baldock came off the bench and did do better. Really nice header. And I suppose it's when it comes to players, you know, within the attack this season, it's been that consistency that we've lacked. So I think Baldock has... Maybe he's not a 20-goal-a-season striker. Maybe he's not a lone striker, and you can say all that. But really, with Puskas in particular, and kind of with Mate, we've had just spells of scoring. And then I always think the most galling thing is with Puskas, he scored a hat-trick against Wigan, just as we were all saying, oh, well, he's got some confidence now, and then went on a 10-game scoring dry spell or something. And that's the thing with the attack for me is that, yes, we have these nice moments where a player like Baldock will score a good goal, but it doesn't tend to lead anywhere.
Yeah, I think the thing we've got to look at as well is the contributions over the pitch. I mean, we're expecting Puskas to score quite a lot of goals. That was pretty much what he was brought in for, as well as Zhao. But we can't rely on the strike force. I mean, you look at the 2011-12 season where we got promoted, and did we really have a 20-goal-a-season striker? Maybe if Jason Roberts came in earlier in the summer, maybe so. But we didn't have one main goal scorer. We had them all over the pitch. And I think, as well, it brings in the role of Yaku Mate, who scored quite a few goals this season in all competitions, mostly in the league. But it just shows how important he can be as well to the first team. I think everyone needs to contribute. And if everyone can contribute across the pitch, then it takes the pressure off Puskas and that to perform. But with the strikers, we're not just looking for goals, we're looking for contributions like Baldock did for the third goal for Mate. So Puskas has got to show a little bit more, and so is Baldock. They've got to show they've got more in them than goals. And I think as long as they show that, then I don't think fans will have any problem with them not scoring as many.
No, and I suppose the thing is as well, going into next season, is the transfer market obviously question marks all over the place. But in terms of the strikers, unless someone comes and signs one of our strikers, I really can't see us spending money on it. It's probably the least, in terms of numbers, the least important place on the pitch to reinforce. You could make an argument for. So therefore, I don't think, you know, as you say, it is about the players we've got now. And maybe that's a good thing. Maybe some stability rather than signing yet another player thinking, oh, this is the guy. Obviously, we've got Lucas Shaw as well. Keeping him fit seems to be the biggest problem. But there we go. Right, so let's go and listen to what Mark Bowen said after the Blackburn game, and then we'll jump into the mailbag.
Getting into the game, you know, and really getting to grips with the intensity of the game starting off. Gifted them two goals, and then you're thinking, well, you're away from home in this league, you're 2-0 down, you know. As the game, have you cost yourselves a game with a slow start? We get back into it, and then again going into the second half, you change a few little things, but tactically, and then you get back into the game, and then the third and the fourth goal, especially as well, it's just poor defending from us, you know, not concentrating, switching off, not putting demands on each other to stop crosses coming into the box or get closer to people. You know, so just that's a frustration. You know what I mean? And as I say, I'm loath to criticise the players, but you know, we've got to push on next year. Now, for me, can't come quick enough. You know, we've got to make sure that we every game we play in, we raise that sort of level of consistency, and we by doing the right things at the right time.
Keep up to date with all things Reading FC. Follow the Tilehurst End on Facebook and Twitter.
Right, Ben Greenwood, friend of the show, starts us off with the question of how much can we really read into these last few games? Season's over, spells of caring, spells where we don't have bothered, lots of change to come. We need some stability, so we keep Bart Bowen. He's improved on last season. I'm confident we will improve a little again next season too. I suppose in a way I can answer that question by saying that we've just given the recap a pretty short shrift, so it would be remiss of me to say that we care loads and loads about these games. Adam, we talk a lot, or certainly I consider a lot to be season-to-season momentum is really important. In my opinion, you can take that from previous Reading seasons, you know, carrying the Brian McDermott spell off the back of the Rodgers half season into the next season when we got into the playoffs and everything like that. I do think you monitor these sort of things, and certainly you can see that with promoted teams who then get promoted again. So momentum is really important. Is that the case this season, though? Because of the break, because of the massive overhaul in the summer, or the uncertainty over the summer, do you think that is true for this season?
I think if we do pick up points on Wednesday, I think it will give us a little bit of confidence. And you've got to remember as well, because of the pandemic, that the interval in between the last game of this season and the first game of this season will be much shorter. I think that's what people have got to bear in mind. But then on the other hand, you've got the summer overhaul, and you know, this current squad won't be the same as next season. I think that's pretty much been universally accepted. And maybe it's like other seasons where it doesn't really play a massive part, because we're bringing in so many players. And hopefully the players that we bring in as well will have that winning mentality to help us get off to the best possible start. And as I said, I don't think that Mark Bowen is the man to take us forward long term, but the problems lie deeper, I think, within the club. And I think that's what Sam Baldock elaborated on.
Yeah, I suppose with the Swansea game in particular, you do not want to go into the summer, however long the summer is, with a loss, especially for three straight losses. If we do get a lovely 3-0 win, then I think that'll make everyone feel better. But in my opinion, probably only for about a week, because then the transfers and everything do take over. I suppose we'll have to wait and see. If we get beat 4-0, then maybe it will be a bad turn, because as you say, it's going to be a pretty short break. Matthew asking on Twitter, Bowen keeps saying he's drumming these messages into the players, but nothing is changing. At what point do we just accept he's not able to motivate the players? Why is it okay for him to blame it on the players and not accept responsibility himself? It's a good point. I think it's really hard from the fans' point of view. I think motivation, you know, in terms of Football Manager sense, we know how it works, but whether that's anything like reality, again, God knows for us sort of fans. And I think, I don't know, what do you think on this? It's a really difficult one for me to say whether the players, you know, do they look motivated sometimes? Is that anything to do with what the manager says? You could argue no, because the season's over.
I think we've shown a bit of fight and a bit of motivation in some spells. I mean, you look at the ability for us to hold on to our 1-0 lead against Charlton Athletic, and then we go to Luton and absolutely destroy them at their own ground. And as well as this getting in, as I said, back into the game against Blackburn 3-3, I think when you boil it down to the bare bones, you've got to say, we've got to remember that he's still learning the ropes, because this is his first season as a professional manager. And to be honest, that is not ideal for a club in our current position where we've got to do a big rebuild. So overall, it's not promising at the moment. And as I said, I don't think he's the man to take us forward long term, although I think he's done a very good job this term. But yeah, I think it was better for him to be an interim manager until the end of the season. But the club have made their decision, and unfortunately, I think we've got to stick with it now. But yeah, I think he needs to take a bit of responsibility as well, because the players aren't going to be too happy with his comments. Like after the Middlesbrough game, as I said, with Baldock and Puskas.
Yeah, I think it's interesting with I think we've kind of seen over the last 5 years in particular. I've not watched loads of them, but there are a lot of football documentaries now on like Man City and Sunderland and places like that. And I've seen with Pep Guardiola in particular in the Man City one, is that he'll be very different in front of the media to what he is in the in front of his players, for example, like in the dressing room. And whether that's the case with Mark Bowen or not, I have no idea. But there is these sort of like differences that you have. You do have managers who play the game effectively. I remember Jose Mourinho, you could argue, is the sort of manager who would never throw his players under the bus, but in public, but in private, obviously would in some respects. So who knows what sort of way Mark Bowen manages. I mean, you kind of suggested there, but maybe you wouldn't have kept him on past the end of the season. I'm personally quite happy to, because I think we just need some stability. And as you say, like long term, who knows whether he can take us to the Premier League, for example. That's a conversation for another day, perhaps. But I think for now, I'm just about happy with how he's doing. And the fact that we've comfortably strolled clear of relegation is a good sign for him, as well as the players, I suppose.
I think I had quite a weird idea, as I'm going to say in my next match preview, that I would not get him out of the club, but I would move him to director of football. I think this is a discussion for another day, but for me, I don't want Bowen out. I want him, Bowen, moved upstairs to a position where he can then go on and form something with Nigel Howe, Dai Young and a new manager and create something that's going to put us on the up.
Yeah, it's not a bad idea, to be fair, because that is how he came into the club originally, famously appointing himself, according to people on Twitter. So, yeah, he's obviously got those skills. It depends. It depends on what situation the club is in. Speaking of the same again sort of question or similar topic, Paolo asking, how much does a manager's personality help unify the club and supporters? Gomez had the personality, but sadly not the points returned with Bowen. It's the opposite. I think it's harsh to say that he's not got any personality. He's got the same, he's got an old school personality, you might describe it. Obviously different to Jose Gomez, who, was coming on club podcasts and being all nice and he was just a nice bloke. Perhaps it's more difficult to unify the supporters, Adam, in a time when the supporters just aren't in the stadiums. Is this a really, really difficult time to do it anyway?
Yeah, I think so. And I think there's four things that define a manager. It's style of play. A fan's view on a manager. Style of play, identity, can we see a long-term future with them, and the ability for them to get points on the board even when facing adversity. Now, Bowen can do the last one with the picking up points where needed. I think he has the ability tactically to hold on to points and to pick some up wherever possible. I think that the problem as well in relation to the question was people aren't really enjoying Mark Bowen's style of play. That's going to be a massive problem for people in terms of attendances, because people are not going to want to turn up if they're not enjoying the style of football. I think, we're not asking for prime Barcelona tiki-taka, but we're asking for something entertaining in a way. And You know, it doesn't have to be passing football. I mean, look at McDermott's side in our promotion season. But we were a threat on the wings, and we had a way of playing, and it was exciting. And, you know, it doesn't have to be a passing style of football, but it has to be entertaining. I think that's what we're currently missing at the moment in large parts.
Yeah, and I agree on the entertainment factor. If we have had some like 3-0 wins and everything this season, I suppose when you've got players like Obi Ajari, the entertainment does kind of take care of itself from a management point of view. But yeah, you're right. There isn't a defined way of playing football that we know we're going to get, and I suppose that does have an impact. In terms of the attendances, I mean, they've been shocking the last few weeks. So I completely agree. He's completely failed on that front.
Yeah.
But I suppose whenever football does come back, certainly for the first few months and phased in and what have you, tendencies will kind of look after themselves. But yeah, I think it's difficult with Bowen because I don't want to say, oh, he's not got an identity or personality, because I think it's just a bit harsh on a manager who, at the end of the day, has come into a team that has reasonable potential, is a young team. He has steadied the ship quite well, and he has kept us up, and he has moved us into some mid-table security. We picked up some, if you look at the record since he's come in, we are right in amongst the playoff picture, not necessarily a guaranteed playoff team, but, you know, the sort of place we love to be next season, which is like challenging with a few games to go. So I'm not going to criticise him at the moment. It can always change for next season. I know that Sim, the Tylerson editor, was doing some questions for 442 magazine in the last couple of days, and he was asked, one of the questions was, what's going to change next season from this season? And basically, my suggestion was that we won't sack our manager in October, which we've done for, last three seasons now.
Yeah.
So hopefully we just won't do that next year, and then we can have a look, and maybe we get to the end of next season and can have another assessment as to where we're going. Andrew Butcher asks, where is Aluko? Is he injured? Have I missed this? I don't think he is.
Well, he hasn't texted me lately, so I'm not sure where he is. But I can't. The thing is with Aluko, I can't see him moving to another club unless he accepts a massive wage cut, or whether he gets sold to Beijing Ren, Dai Yong's other club. But is that in accordance with EFL rules? I think in terms of morality, it's not very good in terms of us selling our stadium. So to sell Aluko to our owner's other club and get quite a big fee for him, I don't think would go down too well with the EFL. But that's the only way I can see him moving, is a wage cut or going to China. And I don't see him doing either, which is but is there any point in playing him? I'm not sure next season.
No, I think Mark Bowen did give him a reasonable chance when he came back from Beijing, and obviously it hasn't worked out, and maybe he is like behind closed doors injured or something. It's not the sort of thing that we get to necessarily find out too much these days. And I don't know, it's a disappointing situation to be in, because I don't have anything against Sonny Luko as a person. I think as a footballer as well, he does try relatively hard. It just hasn't worked out, and he will want to obviously continue to you know, succeed as a player. He doesn't want to sit in the reserves and count his cash. I don't believe he's that sort of player. So it's difficult. Whether we can find a loan move for him, sort of Vito Minoni-esque, I think it would end up probably being abroad. But then is that really much point for the club if it doesn't save us on wages? So we'll have to see. But yeah, God knows where he is for now. Paul Hawkins asks, how much can we get for Swift? Hold on to that question, Paul, because we're going to be talking about that in News Bites. And Sam C, with a longer question on Twitter, he's asking, at the beginning of the 2014-15 season, we sold Adam Lafondra, Sean Morrison and Alex McCarthy, etc., and kick-started the season with many first-team injuries, McCleary and Paul Grebniak, for example. At the time, we were struggling financially, so Adkins handed first-team contracts to promising young players. An article about this was recently on the Tyler Stem by Ollie Allen. We started the season with many of these players starting due to the circumstances, and things actually looked promising. Jake Cooper scoring the win against Ipswich at home, now I'm winning 3-1 in the cup, etc. But when injured players returned, they were forgotten, with Adkins playing old war horses like Ferdinand and Wayne Bridge in place. Should we have played the long game and let these youngsters develop? Should we save our money this summer and do just that? Otherwise, we could lose another loader. I think it's the question is for next season is what do we genuinely think the club is capable of? Does the owner of this football team think that we have to be challenging for promotion next season? Because if he thinks that, I'm not optimistic that we're going to give loads of chances to the players. I think probably like Michael Olise and maybe Tom McIntyre are going to be in around the first team anyway. But if there is for some magical reason we do find some money and splash it around a bit, then I don't think the players are going to get a chance. But if we accept the circumstances, Adam, and say, you know what, next season is again moving gently forward, baby steps, mid-table, playoffs if we're good enough. Maybe we'll look at it in January and think we can spend some money there. Then I think we will give the young players a chance.
Yeah, I think so. I think we need to walk before we can run, I think. And I think we already have kind of a spine of academy players. We've got the likes of, obviously, Tom McIntyre has done well, reasonably well. Hopefully he's fit for the next game. I'm not sure if he will be. Hopefully he is. I think it was just a hit to the face. Richards, we've got Richards at left back maybe, or left mid. I mean, he gives us the option to play him in either spot. We've got Rinomota in the middle, obviously, academy graduate. Maybe Olise, but we've got to look at other options as well. I think it's what the person who asked the question is referring to in terms of the likes of Osho as well. Hopefully he signs a contract. Holsgrove as well has played quite a big part out on loan in Spain. I think that would have been a very good opportunity for him. And Boyce Clark as well, and Southwood as well in the goalkeeping department. I'm trying to think of other ones, but we've released a lot of players. We've released Medford, Smith, Frost, Burley, Odimayo, and that sort of thing. But yeah, I think we've got the spine. But I would accept a mid-table finish if we were to integrate them in the first team.
I think as well with academy players, what a lot of teams have done. You can look at like Tottenham, for example, in the Premier League. They have a what you could call an expensively assembled first 11, which is, you know, gets them places, everything. But then you take a step back, and particularly this was more the case under Pochettino, but you took a step back, and there was the second left back, the second right back were, generally speaking, like those sort of positions were filled with academy players, the young players that they signed. And that, I think, in the Championship is a really good way to go, because what Reading have done in the last few seasons is kind of unbalanced the team, like heavy loaded it on one particular position. And if we can get back to that kind of classic four centre backs, two senior, two young, for example, same of centre mids, four strikers, two seniors, etc., etc., then I think you sort of move towards a situation where you can integrate them more. If we get into, as we said, if we get into a sixth place by Christmas and we think, oh, the academy striker or whatever position isn't doing a good job, go and sign one. Then we can push forward and think about the Premiership. But until that happens, I'm happy for them to certainly bulk out the squad, because we do not need to be spending senior player wages on, like the third choice right back or the third choice centre mid or something, which we have kind of done in the past. Just quickly, before we move on, as Sam C mentioned there, the 2014-15 lot, there were the likes of Craig Tanner, Jake Taylor, Tweek Fosu. These kind of guys were in and around but didn't quite make it at the club. Are these the sort of, do you think that was a massive missed opportunity for the club?
In terms of Fosu and Stacey, for sure. I think the proof is in where they're playing now, because Fosu's at Brentford challenging for promotion, and you've got Stacey as well, who's currently in the Premier League, probably in the Championship next season. But they've both gone on to do very well. And if you fast forward as well, when you look at the likes of, I guess Novakovic was in with them as well. And even though he's had a poor record this season with, I think he went to Italy or somewhere, what could have happened at Reading if we kept him instead of signing Puskas or something like that? We don't know what would have happened. I think it was a big missed opportunity. Especially with, I think we all knew that Fossum and Stacey were going to be good, and we were upset that they both went. I think I remember us actually selling Fossum to Charlton, but with the likes of Tanner's at Aldershot now, I'm not sure where Cole's playing at. But they could have been pretty good if we'd given them more of a chance. But I guess hindsight is a good thing. But it's frustrating that they didn't get the chance.
It is. And I think especially with players like Jack Stacey, we didn't... When we talk about Mikel Antonio, for example, who went in about 2012 when we were in the Premier League, you do think, okay, fair enough. It took him a few years, but he went away and did well, and so be it. But with players like Jack Stacey, it's not like we had like loads and loads of good players in front of them. So, and Jake Cooper as well, again, like playing Anton Ferdinand instead of Jake Cooper and letting him go. And everything just seems like a bit of a silly one. One thing I will add, sort of caveat that, is that, you know, maybe these players had to leave to bring themselves through, the mentality that they had or the motivation that they had to improve and everything like that. Maybe they had to leave to find that within them. I think it's, is it Holmes, one of the Derby players, was at Reading until he was about 16 and then left. And then he was in the, I think it's the Telegraph right before we played them, saying, that, oh, it was, you know, that spurred me on to be the player that I am now. And that's kind of how it works sometimes. Sometimes these players have to stare the abyss in the face, sort of thing. The end of their career might have to be right in front of them to then kick them on to do something. So it's a difficult one, but hopefully I think we're all in agreement to want to see more time and a bit more realism with bringing them through next season. Final question of the mailbag. Simon Povey saying, the Sam Bullock interview, is there a serious problem in the dressing room? Well, let's talk about that now in News Bites.
For all the latest Reading news, analysis and opinion, visit the website at thetilehurstend.com.
Okay, so for those not listening to BBC Berkshire on the weekend after the Blackburn game, Sam Baldock spoke to Tim Deller and had a quite frank interview where he said, these are kind of condensed quotes. He said, I'd be surprised if it's the same dressing room come the start of next season. He said, to being asked whether he'd be at the club, said, yes, definitely. I think on my part, there's a lot of unfinished business. I think I've been one of the players that hasn't benefited from everything that's been going on. I think potentially an easier option is to not play or to not have as many minutes. But listen, this is football. It's a murky industry and there's a lot going on in every club. I'm sure of it. Which are not the most reassuring comments, Adam, in terms of what a first team player would say about the club. But is there anything that you disagree with in that? Would you disagree that he's going to be here next season? Would you disagree that the dressing room is going to shift around? Is that a bad thing or good thing? And also, would you disagree that, you know, things have gone on around the club over the last year, 2 years, 3 years that just haven't been beneficial to anyone?
Yeah, I think I agree on him in pretty much all of his points. And it was refreshing in a way that it wasn't just the same cliched interviews that you sometimes get from players who are media trained. But for a current first team player who played on that day to come out and make comments like that, does that kind of indicate that there really is something bad going on at the club? Obviously, I'm always concerned, especially with what's happened with Anton Zingarevich and Ron Gourlay in the past. You're always going to have trust issues with those at the top of the club. And obviously, I'm not sure if you heard it, but about, I think there was someone said on the podcast, I think it was with David Ornstein, that he said that Dai Young would pay any what sort of wage to a player who he would consider his lucky charm. Now, I don't know who he's referring to specifically, but that's concerning because our wage bill is huge at the moment. And it's really not good. I am concerned. I think we should scrutinise everything that happened at the club this summer. I think we need to look at things more in depth. I think we've got to consider the thing with Kier as well, what role he has in the club. And we've just got to keep an eye on everything. The thing is, we can't really do anything, and that's a sad thing, but I'm going to be keeping my eye on everything this summer and just seeing how it goes.
Yeah, it's an interesting point to make with the Kier Drachman thing, because his, you know, we've signed a lot of players. I don't know the exact number, but a lot of players have been linked to his agency. We're not the only club that's doing that. Arsenal, and if you want to, you know, have a kind of larger example of what's going on at Reading, Arsenal is a really good example of that, where an agent, the same agent, should I say, is having a large say in terms of getting transfers, cutting deals. Are the deals that they're cutting better or worse because they're using an agent? You have to imagine it should be better, otherwise why are we doing it? But yeah, in terms of what's going on with Reading, it's kind of the same situation, and it's really difficult for a Championship club to kind of get a grasp on these sort of things compared to a Premier League club, because we just don't know as much. They're just less coverage, less sort of knowing, less goings on, basically, and the figures are smaller, so they get less headlines and it's less knowledge for the fans, which is a bit of a shame. But yeah, it's going to be a really important summer. Sam Baldock makes some really important points about the dressing room. He's been in two promotion dressing rooms off the top of my head, probably more than that, with Brighton and West Ham, I think it was, out of the Championship. He knows what it looks like. He knows what it feels like. It's obviously not what we've got at the moment. None of the players are coming out at the moment and saying the dressing room's brilliant. That does happen even when you're not doing so well. So yeah, Sam Baldock, is he the type of player that I want at dressing room? Yes. These comments solidified that for me. One player who is not going to be in the dressing room next season, and wasn't this season either, is Mo Barrow. He's confirmed now as leaving the club, joining Korean side Jeonbuk Motors, I think it is. Roughly about 1.4 million, which it double two sides of this coin, Adam. First side is we don't have any wingers. He's a good winger. We could play him. He's only 27. Second side, there's a reason he's not at the club. That's a good amount of money for him. Fair enough.
Yeah, the thing is, I think he needed to go because from what I've heard and from what I've seen, it doesn't seem like he really wanted to be here. And obviously from his loans as well, it just showed that he didn't really want to be here. In saying that, I think we do need a replacement because he brought something different to the team. He's the type of player who can get us up off our seats. Now, obviously, we've got Ajaria and Elise that can do that, but in different kind of ways in terms of their skills. I think with Mo Barrow, he's got the pace to go past a defender. And I think that was showed as well. I remember a certain game, actually, weirdly. I think it was Bolton at home in 2018 under Yap Stam. And he scored the opening goal and he just run down the wing and slotted it into the net. And that was a game that Tom Holmes played as well. But he gives us something different. He gives us that pace. He gives us a bit of threat. And we do need to replace him. But in simple terms, great player on his day. Didn't want to be here. Good to get some money for him. Now let's get a replacement.
Yeah, pace is something that we lack in this team. So I certainly agree that it's an important avenue to go down. And wingers generally, especially with Gareth McCleary and Chris Gunter, both said to be going. With McCleary going, it's a really important thing to replace him and to have wingers. We don't really have wingers. Playing Ajaria and Elise out wide, Richards as well. I'm not really massive on that unless it's really important for the tactics of the game, for example. So, yeah, Mobile going, fair enough. One player who might be going as well, Barkshire saying that John Swift is nearing a £3.5 million move to Sheffield United. That is an initial £3.5 million, I should say, which... He divides opinion, John Swift. I wrote at the start of the season that he's our most important player. I felt that because when he's on and he's a real top player. When he's not, the whole team suffers. So you could make an argument to say that he's not been on this season. I think he's been our player of the season, but that we'll discuss that at the final show in a few days' time. But in terms of this deal, I think £3.5 million, the market could show that's a lot of money. The future of football could show we'll never spend £5 million on a Championship player again. But from here and now, seems like too little a fee.
Yeah, I said when we did that round table, I said, I think we need to get £6 million for him. But then you look on the other side of it when you've got the wage bill. Now, our wage bill is absolutely ridiculous. And considering, I think he signed a contract extension under Gourlay, and considering he's one of our key players, he's probably on quite a high wage. And I think he's just one of many players who will leave this summer. I think the transfer fee is not so much the issue because obviously Mr. Dye has a lot of money. I think it's the weekly wage building up and up and up and up that I think is the problem. And I think that's probably the reason why he had to go. And there was someone on Twitter, and I can't remember his name, and I'm sorry that I can't. Who said we might have had to sell Swift to get Ajaria. Now, I'm not sure about the structure of the Ajaria deal. I'm not sure if it was an option to buy or whether it was an obligation to buy. If it was an obligation to buy and we were in a bit of trouble, then it would have made, then it makes sense really to sell Swift for 3.5 million and get Ajaria in if it was an obligation to buy. So that's another way of looking at it. So I think it was a need to sell. Disappointing at the low price, but at the end of the day, I think we needed to sell. And
I suppose if you are saying it as a straight up, would you rather have Ajaria for the next five seasons or Swift for the next five seasons? You'd have to say Ajaria because he's a little bit younger, and I think he can go arguably further. But as I say, I do think John Swift's been really good this season. There is always a chance next season he's not so good. We have seen that with him. My problem with the £3.5 million fee is £3.5 million up front, and as you say, moves into Ajaria, then that works to some extent. But I mean, a sell-on clause, yeah, who knows? Okay, 10%, that might be worth 3 million quid down the line, fair enough. But appearances, I can't see him being a consistent fixture in that Sheffield United team. A lot of their signings last summer did very little, really. It's effectively still the same team that they got promoted with, bar, you know, a couple of players here and there. A bonus if they avoid relegation next season, okay, fair, etc. But I cannot see John Swift being anything more than the kind of substitute replacement for Ollie Norwood in that Sheffield United team. And therefore, it's just not... I can't see that fee rocketing up.
Yeah, I can't see Norwood and Swift in the same starting 11 starting in the Premier League. I think that even though Norwood might have a bit about them, I think that's still a bit too lightweight for the Premier League, especially with Swift adapting as well from the Championship to the Premier League. I can't see them two starting together. I think he'll be on the bench. And with that fee as well, they can afford to have Swift on the bench if they're only playing like £3.5 million for him.
Yeah, no, that's totally right. And I did just check as you're speaking then. He signed his contract in July 2017, which a five-year contract that was. So he still had 2 years left to run. So, yeah, we obviously weren't going to be able to afford to extend that unless we got promoted. So you can make an argument for that. But, yeah, I think it's one of those things where if the club has a plan for it, it knows what it's going to do with the money. It knows how the team's going to look with John Swift, because let's face it, we do not need Elise and Ajaria and Swift. They can't all play together. Then, okay, fair enough. But I do just have reservations about the fee, I think.
Yeah, so do I.
Yeah, well, let's see how that one pans out. Nothing confirmed yet. Obviously, it could all change in the next few days. And in the next few days, Reading season finally comes to an end. So let's move on now to Big Match Preview.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
So this is not your standard Wednesday night 6 p.m. kickoff. It's 7:30 on Wednesday, the 22nd of July, Reading at home to Swansea, every championship game at that time, because it is the final game of the season. And this one, Adam, throw some stats at you. We've drawn 5 of our last 10 meetings with Swansea and won none of them. Drawn 5, lost 5 of our last 10 meetings. 2008, last time we beat them. We've only won our final home game, our final home league game of the season on 1 of the last 8 occasions. So we always finish badly against the team who still has a chance of getting the playoffs. I think they have to win and Cardiff have to lose. Cardiff playing Hull, who are in relegation trouble. So, well, basically relegated. So who knows what's going to happen with that. All of those things just kind of point towards a pretty miserable, turgid end of the season.
I've got 2 more stats for you that will make your case even stronger. They've only lost 2 away games, if my calculations are correct. 2 away games they've only lost in 2020. And they are unbeaten, again, if I'm right, in 18 of their 22 away games this season. So it only strengthens your case that this scoreline is only going to go one way.
Yeah, no team has lost fewer away games than Swansea. 4 out of the 22, absolutely right. And this is, I think, the question that you know, in terms of what's going to happen, as we've said, it looks kind of one-sided. What some fans might argue is let's just play loads of kids, let's change the team a lot. I think we have to play our strongest team in this. And I'm not interested in the playoff race, that doesn't bother me. But for the fact that Swansea is still in it suggests that if we are anything but perfect, and if we are playing loads of kids and really bad, they will just destroy us. And that is not a good way to end the season. So I think we have to play the strongest team we have available for this game.
I mean, when you look at it as well, compare it to this time last season, we were able to play Elise, Barrett and Loader in the final game of last season against Birmingham City, and they actually played quite well. But I agree with you, I don't think we can afford to experiment too much in this game, because if we get absolutely hammered on Wednesday, then that's not a good result going into next season or going into pre-season. And we need all the luck and all the momentum we can get, especially with this summer's overhaul. And if we lose this game quite heavily, then I guess it doesn't have too much of an impact. But for me, we need to make sure we're getting as many good results as possible. And we need to put in a good performance. Even if we don't get a result, we need to put in a good performance on Wednesday and give our fans something to get excited about ahead of next season.
I think as well for next season, the fact of the matter, presuming Swansea don't get into the playoffs, which, as I say, Cardiff playing Hull, we're bottom of the league, Swansea probably won't get into the playoffs even if they beat us. So we're going to be playing teams like Swansea next season and thinking that if we're going to have any chance of a shot of a top half finish, we're going to have to beat them, especially at home. So, you know, if it's a good performance and we lose, then fair enough. But there's no merit to saying, oh, we only lost 2-0 Swansea, doesn't matter. Because those are exactly the sort of teams who next season we have to be competing against. I don't have to beat them, but we have to be competing with them. So it's an important game. I'm sure Mark Werner knows that, and I'm sure that he's going to play a good team. Do you think there's a chance that we'll see a team devoid of loanees and out-of-contract players?
I hope so, because I didn't even see the point of starting Gunter in the last game. I guess to give Osho a rest, maybe. But I think Osho needs to come in if he's not injured for this game. I don't see the point of us playing any out-of-contract players or any loan players unless we absolutely need to, or unless there's injuries or that sort of thing. Yeah, I just don't see any point. I don't know. Yeah, I don't see any point at all.
No, neither do I, to be fair. Tyler Blackett has obviously been playing a lot. Jordan Abita has kind of been in and around the team. That suggests they're kind of more likely to sign. Charlie Adam, I think he said on Twitter the other day that he's kind of still in talks, but we've not seen him in and around the team. So I'll be surprised if he stays. But I mean, with a player like Charlie Adam, maybe you do keep him. He's not going to get any slower. But in terms of predictions then, prediction league, I will hold back until the big reveal and final episode as to who has won that. But prediction, Adam, where are you going to go for this one?
I put in my match preview that it's going to be a 2-0 loss, I'm afraid.
Fair enough. I am going to go for a 2-1 victory for Swansea because, yeah, Reading can play well in this game, but I don't think we're going to have the motivation that Swansea have. It's just human nature, and we've lost our last two games. So why would we suddenly turn around and beat them? So that is, in terms of this podcast then, because this is the penultimate episode of the season, I haven't got a perfect date exactly lined up at the moment for when our season review is going to be. High chance that it's going to be kind of like this time next week. I do prefer to let the dust settle a little bit on to the end of the season podcast. So let's pencil in early next week then for us, dear listeners. And thank you very much for listening, especially as we get into this kind of end of season, busy, so many games and everything. It is difficult to keep on top of what's going on with the club. So thank you very much for persevering with us during that. Adam, as well, thank you very much for popping by this week. This weekend? No, it's Monday. This Monday.
No worries. Absolute pleasure, as usual.
And we'll be back next time to review the season. Reading have, well, pretty comfortably made themselves a mid-table team. Is that perfect? No. Is it better? Yes. That's the fact of the matter. And let's see if we can end the season with a morale-boosting 3 points. Until next time, Thank you for listening, and come on, you Arse.
You smile.